I'm Jerry Pippin, and we're broadcasting from Angel Fire in New Mexico. And we have Chris O'Brien, and a very interesting man. Chris, welcome to the show. And first of all, you do wonderful things. You're working with a lot of people. I know you're doing some stuff on the Paracast. You're working with a fellow out of Washington, D.C., or close to it.
Ray Stanford.
Yeah, that we've done shows with, and we still have another show to do with mm-hmm. him that we recorded. He's quite an interesting individual.
Oh, yeah. They broke the mold when Ray came along, and his twin brother, Rex.
And on top of all that, you've got a great story to tell, and let's talk about what's happening up here in Colorado.
Well, just in a nutshell, of course, I've been a long-time investigator of the things that go bump in the night, and I started in 1992 as very innocently as a reporter for my local newspaper, little town paper, and we had some incredible UFO sightings that quite a number of people, about 15, I think, witnesses saw. And I thought, hey, this sounds great. I thought all the UFO sightings in the San Luis Valley ended back in the 60s, maybe the 70s. I didn't think anything was still going on, so I got excited, and I interviewed everybody and was going to write a little article for my local newspaper, which ended up being a large article. And within 2 months, I was on national TV, and I've just never looked back since. I've amassed a huge database of unusual events that have occurred in the San Luis Valley of Colorado, which is just north here of the Taos area. It's a big valley. It's the largest alpine valley in the world. It extends all the way up into Colorado. And and I'm down here speaking about my work in the San Luis Valley.
Well, let's talk about what's going on up there. I mean, things still happening, I think.
Oh, yeah. I just had a woman come down and introduce herself, and she lives just over the border and, with New Mexico. She's just over the border in Colorado. And 4 days ago, she had a big triangular, black triangular-shaped object with a weird apparatus on the back end fly right over her ranch. And then I think a week and a half, about 10 days ago, she had sighting of F-16s chasing this brilliant orange globe across the valley. And so things are still going on. Since November of 2009, we've had 12 mutilated cattle, 2 mutilated horses, and a mutilated goat. So things are definitely picking up. The last couple of years, we've seen things really pick up. From about 1999 to 2005, there was very little activity. We had a brief upsurge for about 6 months, and then it stopped. There was complete cessation of activity, and then in the last 2 years, it's really started to take off again.
So these cattle mutilations, and we talk about that, but you just mentioned other animals involved.
Yeah.
Have you run across any human
mutilations? Well, interesting, you should ask. About a half hour ago, I had a gentleman come up and say that he had heard some scuttlebutt on shortwave radio that there were 3 teenagers that were found mutilated in the San Luis Valley about the end of April, he thinks. Now, I normally wouldn't, since you asked.
I understand.
I normally would not say anything about that. Again, I don't want to ID the spot where this supposedly occurred. I need to call the sheriff of that particular county and do some investigative work and some research on this.
Well, we'll certainly follow up with
very,
you on that.
I would be very disturbed if this proved out to be true. That's horrific to think about.
Now, what do you think's happening with what's going on? Or is it various things?
Yeah, it's very complicated. I really have a sense that there are multiple groups with multiple agendas. I think a vast majority of true cases. First of all, let me kind of qualify this. I think quite a number of these reported cases are amateur people looking at something that appears high strange and ascribing high strangeness to it. I think a lot of these cases are misidentified scavenger and predator action. But there are quite a number that aren't. And I've personally investigated over 200 cases, and I've seen some that just are physically impossible to explain. Unfortunately, we don't have the time. We have time windows that we can investigate these things scientifically. The Valley tends not to produce these cases, the next morning. It's very rare to have a case that happened the night before. Usually there's been a day or two or three. And we have to be there in a timely manner to get forensic samples so that veterinary pathologists and diagnostic labs can do our testing for us. But I have a sense that there's a human agency that's potentially monitoring the spread of mad cow disease in the food chain is, I don't think it's the ranch, it's the animal. I think it's a location where these cases occur. The San Luis Valley has no pollution, and so this may be like a control group for their baseline data, and then they're maybe doing cases elsewhere, South America, Australia, and looking for the spread of transmissible spongiform encephalopathy in the food chain. Yes, I still eat beef, but I'm very careful about what beef I eat. Let's put it that way.
Right. So you figure this is some sort of a U.S. government activity, or do you figure activity, or do you? What do you think?
I don't
it is?
Really factor anything totally out or anything totally in.
Okay.
We've had some high strange cases that I don't think that modern science could even duplicate. There have been some very bizarre cases. One case I had where the animal's brain was missing with no break into the cranium, no evidence at all in a pristine snowfield. The animal was totally drained of fluids, which is rare. Most of these animals aren't drained of fluids, but contrary to popular belief. But this particular one was, and it wouldn't rot. There was a total retardation of the necrotic process, which was very disturbing. It had a kind of a weird sort of perfumey medicine smell.
Was this a cow or what?
It was a calf, a yearling calf, and it was missing all its respiratory organs. Its upper respiratory organs were gone, the lungs and the heart. And I had a case back in the late 90s where the animal's spinal cord was excised with no break in the spine. How do you do that? How do you ream out perfectly a spinal cord? There have been some cases that have been bizarre. There was a case in the late 70s in Weld County, Colorado, where when they went to do an autopsy on the animal, and they cut into the animal, it was a female cow, and they cut into the bag, the udder, where the udders are. It was perfectly packed with sand. So that when you looked at it, it looked like it was just a regular bag filled with milk. But then when you cut into it, it was filled with sand. How do you explain that? I mean, there's been.
And now it was. How do you think the sand got in there?
Well, that's what I'm saying. That wasn't your tax dollars at work. That was something definitely different.
Uh-huh.
We've had cases of unborn fetuses that have been found during an autopsy that have been mutilated in the same fashion as the mother. How do you explain that? So, these are very rare cases. The vast majority of cases tend to be done with sharp implements like a scalpel. They tend to be a little bit less professional looking than some of the high strange cases. It's really very complicated terrain. This is not a cut and dried one size fits all explanation for it.
We'll follow up with a little bit more about that, but we want to talk about Chris for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You have a website?
I do indeed. OurStrangePlanet.com. That's OUR Strange Planet.
We have a link to that.
Yeah. It's.
What will you find on there?
Well, if you become a member of the site, which is free, and we don't give away email addresses or anything or spam you or anything, but that will allow you to get in and have access to my entire database. I'm open source with all my data. I don't hold anything back. I don't charge for it. So if you're interested in my work, my sighting log goes all the way back to 1777, which is the first documented sighting in the San Luis Valley. So it's all there. Plus, I update it with strange stories and unusual events and updates from the world of the paranormal. It's chock full of stuff.
Have you written a book?
I've written 5 books, actually.
Yeah, right.
I've written a bunch.
That was a leading question.
I've written 3 books about my San Luis. I've written 3 books about my San Luis Valley investigative work. I call it the Mysterious Valley Trilogy. I've just written a book that came out about a year ago called Stalking the Tricksters, which is an out-of-the-box attempt to come up with a unified field theory to explain paranormal phenomenon. Go figure.
Interesting book.
Oh, yeah, it is.
A different concept.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to cover much of that material today because they're only giving me an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, my minimum talk is 2 hours, and I was going to try to do 2 talks in 1, but forget that. And I've also written an unpublished book on the life and times of Ray Stanford. which...
Oh, okay. Already, that explains why you're working with her.
Well, one of the reasons, yeah. I've already turned down a publishing deal on it because Ray doesn't want it out yet, so...
Well, we all know Ray.
Yeah.
He's an interesting fellow.
And, but he's a tough one.
And we have several interviews with him that people can find on our website, as far as that goes.
He's a fascinating guy. Talk about a guy who's been there and done that. There's very few people still in this field that can put sentences together that have been in the field over 50 years. He's one of them.
That's true. Now, you were working as a reporter.
Correct.
Covering regular stuff.
Regular stuff.
And what actually happened to get you there? I mean, just a sighting or was...
Well, it was, yeah, I had a Christmas, New Year's Eve party in 1992, New Year's Eve, and about 30 people in my house, and everywhere I went in the party at one point, there were little groups of people talking about these UFOs that they'd seen, and nobody from the other rooms knew the other people had seen them, and
mm-hmm.
I realized going to the, three or four different groups talking about the same sighting, I interviewed them all separately and brought them together and said, did you know all these people saw what you saw? And I wrote that first article, and I've done 40 TV shows and been on hundreds of radio shows.
How was the reaction there at the newspaper on the first article?
Well, they were a little leery. The little town, Crestone, where I lived, it has a reputation of being like a little mini Sedona wannabe. There's a lot of New Agers and stuff there, and it's a very metaphysical town, and some of this stuff does have the veneer of fear-based stuff, which I try to stay away from being judgmental, either positive or negative about this stuff. Mutilated livestock doesn't seem very positive, but we mutilate a million head of livestock, every week and a half in this country. So,
yeah, you can't ignore it.
Yeah, you can't ignore it. So, we all love beef, most of us, and there was some initial enthusiasm, but as soon as the tourists started coming in, and I'd have van loads of Japanese tourists hop out and take pictures of my house, and it started to get a little weird there after a while. And I finally did end up leaving the valley in 2002 because I was becoming the story, and I felt that the actual work was suffering.
We don't expect you to reveal where you live now. Or
I'm south of Sedona. Let's put it that way.
So, okay. Now, you'd call this a mysterious valley, and we talked about UFO sightings, and we talked about animal mutilations. But as far as the rest of it, what else is mysterious happening there?
Oh, Jerry, you name it. The variety.
A burning bush or something?
I've had a burning bush. Actually, Bill Moyers was a witness to it. He was walking with a Ute elder and Maurice Strong, who's Undersecretary General for the Environment of the UN. They're walking around a ghost town out in the Sangres, and a bush exploded into fire in front of them. Actually, it's funny you should ask. we've had witches, elementals, dwarves, leprechauns.
Wait a minute. Let's talk about the leprechauns.
Yeah.
I thought they were all in Ireland.
No. There's legends of dwarf forms and leprechaun forms. There's diminutive, elementals like sprite types. All the Native Americans in this part of the world and everywhere in the United States have traditions.
Any skinwalker legends up there?
Well, skinwalkers are black magicians in the Diné tradition, Apache mm-hmm. and Navajo. I've had reports of skinwalkers. They're not the type of thing that you want to mess with. They're very powerful. They have hidden knowledge that they've been able to hold on to secretly for thousands of years.
So it seems to me, Chris, you're walking a fine line here, and I can identify with this myself. You're open to all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also, I guess, agnostic.
Yeah, I don't believe any of this. I don't believe any of this, but I am open-minded enough and intrigued enough to do the research.
That's what I'm trying to get at, because I've talked to
you. I don't even believe my own experiences half the time. I've seen stuff that it just I still can't believe
it.
Every type of UFO that you could imagine. I've had them fly 150 feet in front of my car in broad daylight, structured craft, 12, 15 feet long. I've had huge triangles block out a sizable portion of the sky. I've seen stuff taken off, landing. I've run up on my porch and videotaped stuff flying by. I've videotaped as many as 13 UFOs in a single event with night vision. It just goes on and on. I have a network of skywatchers around the entire region, and and we have a phone tree. When things are really hopping, you know, we call each other and let each other know, hey, it's coming in your direction, that sort of thing. There's treasure legends here, the Native American legends, dimensional doorways, flying seed pods, star people. It just runs the gamut.
The flying teapot. Tell me about that. Flying, it jumps off the table or what?
Flying seed pod.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's how they described it. I haven't looked at it. I haven't seen a flying teapot since I watched Alice in Wonderland. I think there was a flying teapot
what we're talking
on that
about.
One. That's
well, those things, the poltergeist actions do happen, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I had a really interesting couple of haunting cases.
It, but actually,
yeah, there's been some pretty good haunting cases. We had I had a case last year, a year ago, June, where a new arrival to the valley was resting in his living room in his easy chair, and this he described it as like a giant copy machine light, you know, the vertical light that goes sideways and then back. It appeared above him in the vaulted ceiling, and he felt frozen in his chair, and his chair moved over to the other side of the room, and it freaked him out. He didn't know where to go, who to talk to. He found out about one of my field investigators reported it to him, and it just unleashed a whole investigation. I had a report a couple of months ago. A couple from Italy was visiting Crestone. They were staying in a guest house, and they had this huge, brilliant ball of light circle the guest house right outside their windows. Totally freaked them out. And about 25 minutes later, a similar event occurred down at the Great Sand Dunes Oasis about 15, 20 miles away. So stuff's still going on there. And it's, I wouldn't know really where to begin. The variety and intensity of unusual occurrences. I've never heard of a place that has so many different types of things that happen so often.
I wonder why that location. Nobody really knows.
I have a theory. I think it's a portal area or a hotspot window area. It has unusual geophysical properties. There's unusual gravitational lows there. You have the Earth's magnetic field has minimum and maximum field strength in close proximity to one another. The seams between these areas tend to be where the activity occurs. We've got Native American legends that go back into prehistory. A documented historical record of waves of unusual events, and we have the military being up to its eye teeth in involvement in these areas. We have exotic craft, psychotronic conventional craft that are lit up to look like UFOs. We have UFOs that are being followed or chased by conventional military craft. I mean, it's a cauldron of, it's a kaleidoscope of activity.
Any known military bases around there?
Yeah, we got about 15 minutes away. Flight time is Buckley, Peterson, Lowry, NORAD, Cheyenne Mountain. So, about a half hour away is Kirtland, Los Alamos.
So you have reason to believe the U.S. government's up to some of this.
Oh, absolutely. They may test all their stuff and get it operational in Area 51, but when they want to see how it affects the local population, they want to gauge the reaction, see if people spot it, if they report it as a UFO, if they file a report with the sheriff, if it makes the media, if there's some sort of spin on it. They want to gauge the psychological effect of this technology on an unsuspecting public. Area 52 would be a good way to describe the San Luis Valley, because I'm pretty convinced that they test certain exotic and even conventional aerial platforms there. Mm-hmm. And there's convoys of vehicles going around all the time. We have tunneling equipment seen moving through the valley. It's really a kaleidoscope there. I that's the only way I can describe it.
A couple of things come to mind when I'm talking to you about this. And the first thing, before I forget it, is you lived there and you're working as a reporter. Were you aware of all this stuff going on before you got turned on and started investigating
No,
this?
I wasn't. I knew about the Snippy the Horse case. In fact,
Tell me about that. I don't know.
Well, the Snippy the Horse case was the first publicized animal mutilation that occurred the end of the first week of September 1967. It was an international news story. I saw the National Enquirer, the World News, whatever rag at the grocery store when I was a 10-year-old kid. And I bugged my mom for a dime or however much it cost to buy it, because the headline was Flying Saucers Killed My Horse.
Yeah.
And they're looking at this horse that was totally denuded of all flesh from its shoulders to the tip of its nose. a very unusual case. And so I devoured the article before we even got home. And so that's when I first found out about the Valley. But I knew there was stuff going on there.
But not as intensely as...
Well, I thought it all ended back in the 70s. They had a wave of activity in the mid-70s that I'd heard about. But when I got there, I thought it was all ancient history. I just love the place because it's a very sacred, special... it's just a very powerful place. The quality of silence in the San Luis Valley is unlike anywhere I've been. There's a roaring silence. It's a very powerful place. The first day I moved there, I remember driving into town, looking up at the mountains, going, "What am I doing here? This place is carnivorous. It can eat you, chew you up and spit you out if you're not careful." And boy, I must be psychic.
The mysterious valley. Yeah. You got the ambiance or the vibrations or when you moved there.
Oh right? Yeah, I started initially the first 2 years I was there. I would ask some of the locals, "Hey, you ever see anything something weird or see something weird?" And you go, "Yeah, I'm looking at one right now. Why are you asking me this?"
Yeah, I
quickly found out that asking questions about UFOs and mutilated livestock was not going to win me very many friends. So I kept my mouth shut and my ears open, put it that way.
We only got a couple more minutes with you, Chris, and then we have to move on. The website, tell me more about that. First of all, how they find it. We have a link to it, but a lot of people listen away from computers.
Right, ourstrangeplanet.com. Basically, it's a place to go to find out what's been going on the last few days. I try to keep it adding news stories there from around the world of strange events that don't make sense that occur daily around the planet. And then I also have a whole section about my San Luis Valley investigative work. And like I said before, my entire database is there. So you can spend a couple of weeks. It'll probably take you to read the whole thing. It's pretty voluminous. It's amazing. If I hadn't investigated and researched all the reports, I would have a hard time believing it.
Okay, you're doing some work for Ray Stanford, mm-hmm. and also you do the Paracast. Mm-hmm. And what else is on your plate?
Well, I'm putting together a 7-8 camera surveillance setup on cell towers and mountains around the San Luis Valley so we can monitor the valley full time, 24/7. And we're going to establish a Skywatch channel on the local cable system in the valley so that people can have a channel that shows, a flipping image from all these different cameras showing the valley. And if something happens, all the cameras will be have motion tracking and zero in on this object so we can do some hard scientific research.
And our time is up.
Cool.
We look forward to doing a longer interview with you.
Will
soon.
Cool.
And maybe you'll know a little bit more whether or not this was just a wives' tale about human mutilation case or not.
I'm definitely going to look into that. Yeah, that's very frightening. I hope it's not true.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jerry.
I'm Jerry Pippin. Don't go away. We'll be right back. If you are a UFO show buff, can't get enough UFO programming, we suggest you go to our UFOshowsToGo.com website regularly. Bookmark us. We put all of our UFO programming there as a link. It's easy to find. Simply go to UFOshowsToGo.com. It's available as a podcast, MP3, or Windows Media downloads. Either way, listen or download. We do our best to give you the latest in UFO news.